Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Oh, hey, before we start the show, I got to tell you about the Allegedly podcast with my lawyers, Bo Bowen and Ryan Schmidt. They got pop culture, they got legal news, they got behind the scenes antics and a whole lot of laughs. One of the best podcasts I've ever heard. Allegedly with Bo and Ryan at thebowenlawgroup.com. Link in the description and everywhere you get your podcasts, of course. And now let the cartoons begin.
The Bob Seska Show.
Bob Seska.
Hi, Bob.
Oh, hi, Bob.
Hi, Bob.
Hello.
The Bob Seska Show.
From our nation's capital, it is Tuesday, May 23, 2023, and this is the Bob Seska Show on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. Hi, I'm Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Hi. Day 853 of the Biden-Harris administration, 532 days until the 24th presidential election. Instagram, my handle is TheBobSeska. That's where you can find me. Twitter, BobSeska_go. Spoutable, Bob Seska. Patreon page, BobSeskaShow.com. And sitting right over there, it's Buzz Burbank with the news.
Yeah. Say Buzz Burbank.
Yeah, that's her.
You've said it all.
Good day.
I told you, that's Martha Stewart.
Just got a copy of Sports Illustrated.
I know what you're talking about. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, listen. Hi. Everybody. He's Bob. I'm Buzz. And we just barely got by the paparazzi.
Had to kick some ass a little bit there.
Lucky to be alive. Well, this is it. This is the week Florida Governor Ron DeSantis throws his tinfoil hat into the ring. And this week, Disney scrapped plans to move its Imagineering division from California to Florida. That's off after learning that DeSantis had outlawed Imagining.
By the way, I don't know if anyone's keeping score at home. That's my favorite joke today.
Yeah. Well, it was a piece of advice, a warning kind of for everybody. It's never a good idea to look at presidential polls this far out from the election. The only polls you should trust right now are the ones conducted by Family Feud.
Survey says!
Republican politicians in seven states now have laws to imprison librarians over certain books. I think I figured out why. They're going to need something to read when they go to prison. Don't you think?
They don't read.
The state of Montana has outlawed TikTok, as you may have heard. What you may not have heard is Montana didn't stop there. They also banned them newfangled cordless phones. Forget it.
That sounds like a Letterman joke. That was awesome.
the movie and TV writer's strike has the network scrambling for more reality shows. Yeah. I hate that. Yeah. More reality shows this fall because of the strike. ABC is actually planning, this is true, ABC actually planning a series called Senior Bachelor featuring single senior citizens. Two words, ladies. Rupert Murdoch.
The Bob Seska Show.
All right, here we
go. Stand your ground.
When he was just a boy, his state passed. Stand your ground.
Stand your ground.
And now he's just obsessed
with drag queens all around. Call him Drag Ron Little. Drag Ron wearing two tight suits and some go-go boots. Drag Ron, he burned our books to read. He has some evil plans.
Rocky Mountain Mike, Rocky MNTN Mike on Twitter. Follow him now. Boy, that was a good one.
Beautiful. Masterpiece.
Yeah. I got an angry email from Mike the other day saying, hey, why didn't you play Drag Ron? And I said, did I get Drag Ron? And I said, oh, shit, I did. I did, and I forgot. It got lost in the mix somewhere.
Communications breakdown. Well, it got here now, and that's where the replay. I like that a lot.
So, yeah, we're going to talk about Ron DeSantis a little bit later on in the show. Plus, we're going to talk about him a lot on the Shadow Docket portion of the show on our Patreon page. Right. And you know what that address is, patreon.com/Bob Seska Show. Sign up now. Okay, so where do we start here? Lots of things to get to today, Buzz.
Big stuff, yeah.
A Nazi drove a U-Haul into the barriers outside the White House. Is that what happened?
It's certainly the appearance of it. There's a lot we don't know as we record this show today, but we do know this. A 19-year-old white guy from Missouri drove a rented U-Haul truck that, thank goodness, was empty. Into the barriers that protect the White House. The barriers did their job. No one was injured. The man's been arrested for a number of things, including posing a threat to the president and or vice president of the United States. And we know that the truck was emblazoned for a bit with a Nazi flag, with a flag with a swastika on it. Although there is much we don't know about this story yet, I think we can conclude that this is part of the sort of neo-Nazi, white supremacist, white nationalist, Christian nationalist violence that we see more and more of every day. Yeah. And if nothing else, it is a terrorist act. Even if there were no explosives aboard that truck, the purpose of this was to induce terror, to say, we're Nazis, we're here, and we're not going anywhere. Which doesn't rhyme, but they're going with it anyway.
Right. And they've already implemented all kinds of security measures outside the White House. It's kind of a futile effort to try something like that. I mean, even I think it was certainly after 9/11, they expanded their security measures. There were a couple of situations where there were fence jumpers. I think there were at least one or two during Obama's two terms. I think there was one during Trump's one loser term.
And 1/6 hasn't caused them to stand down any. I think, if anything, security's been increased since the insurrection. So it's nothing is impenetrable. For every lock, there is a key. For every system, there's a failure. As much as can reasonably be done has been done. And fortunately, in this circumstance, the situation, the system worked.
Back in my day, Buzz, terrorists would fly airplanes onto the White House lawn and try to do that. But now it's just U-Hauls. So they're kind of taking a step down, isn't that?
Well, budget, you know, it's budget cuts.
it's inflation, right?
All the terror money's going to the top 1% now.
That's right. Right. Oh, crap. All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on that story, obviously, as details come in here to our newsroom.
We mentioned it because people are talking about it, thinking about it, and it's nothing we can even spend a lot of time on, but we wanted to acknowledge it. And I wanted to make note of it because, again, another Nazi or wannabe Nazi.
And I think this is the sort of shape that, if there is some sort of coming violent conflict between the various political factions in this country, this is how it's going to kind of look. We're talking about things like that, things like mass shootings and so on. We're not talking about the traditional view of a fighting civil war, a hot civil war, where you've got two armies marching against each other in a field somewhere in Pennsylvania. It's more about these acts of terrorism. It's more about sort of what you would consider to be guerrilla warfare in a sense.
Right, right.
And I don't say any of this lightly. Obviously, this is very, very bad news. Yeah.
A large number of people could be killed by any number of these attempts or these incidents. Today's was not threatening in that way. It was not lethally threatening. But the next one could be, and there have been those before it that were. Yeah. This is just a way of reminding us, hey, we're out here, you know, and we're not going anywhere. Well, you know, I hope that changes. I think there's a small amount, but I think this is this kind of, as you were saying, if there's going to be a civil war, you're looking at it.
Yeah.
Dear Martha, a guy drove a truck into a concrete barrier today. Other than that, pretty quiet.
Do that again, and we'll have some music with it.
Dear Martha, I'm writing you from the front, where a guy drove his truck into a concrete barrier today. No one was injured. God, when will this war ever end? Yours, William.
Okay, awesome. That was outstanding.
Thank you.
Yeah, I bet you didn't know you were going to do a dramatic performance today, did you?
No, I didn't. And it showed, didn't it? But, I think you said it. This is the kind of civil war we're looking at. And some of it could be quite deadly. Today's wasn't. Yeah. But we need to make note of these things because it's another seemingly Nazi-related incident.
I mean, this may be a stupid question, Buzz, but say you're a news executive at Fox News Channel or Newsmax or one of these awful, awful shithole websites like Breitbart. At some point, do you go, hey, you know, we're inciting all this violence with our insanely over-the-top conspiracy theories and disinformation and propaganda, our attacks against the Democrats and so on. Maybe we shouldn't do that anymore. Is that ever a point of conversation that's ever going to come up in any of these news organizations? And I say news organizations using the loosest possible definition of news.
Not as long as the revenue is there. Not as long as the, and you know, profits. It's difficult to put a finger on it. You know, Fox is slippery in the sense that it gets some money from cable companies and it gets some money from advertisers. And it's hard to, you can't say, well, they did it for ratings or they did it for profit. They're doing it for revenue. The bottom line is it is money that drives this. So if you're that guy, if I'm that guy at that network, and, you know, obviously we're talking crazy here, but whoever would be in that position, if you were faced with this, it would depend on your character in part, but also it would depend on your desire to continue to feed your family. And, you know, not that a lot of these folks have that to worry about, but they're protective of their careers and their income. And if the boss says the revenue is good, then you don't change anything.
Now,
courts can shape that, of course. I think the recent rulings we've seen, I think Fox is and will continue to be more careful about certain things. They won't change their stripes. They'll continue to be Fox. They'll continue to spew the BS, but they're going to be more careful about things like slander and libel and publishing false information. Well, they'll continue to do that, but the courts have warned them, have provided sort of lanes for them to stay within.
I don't know that they'll ever depart from this, just answering my own question.
Right.
I think if their brand is wrapped around disinformation and propaganda, they have no choice but to continue doing that. In fact, I feel as though Fox News in particular is going to become more and more extreme as time goes on, not less extreme, especially coming out of all of this turmoil internally and externally with lawsuits and firings and so on, losing a lot of their viewership to some of these other awful disinformation networks. Yeah. And so in that regard, I think as they start to replace certain staff members, I know, I think the latest rumor going around is that Laura Ingraham has either been fired or is due to be fired any minute.
Right. That's been a resurfacing and submerging theory for months now.
Yeah, yeah. But she's going to be replaced by someone who's probably more extreme, like either Greg Gutfeld or Jesse Waters or one of those kinds of people who you can very easily insert whatever word words into their mouths that you want them to say, no matter how extreme or ridiculous.
So, and there doesn't seem to be any shortage of those people. And no. Like I said, I made it a point to say that Fox will not change its stripes. It will continue to lie. It will continue to publish disinformation. But I think the courts are providing guardrails that it has to stay within certain means to avoid losing millions more in lawsuits. I think a directive from the top is that, you know, what we've learned in court is we can't do A, B, and C. Well, that list could grow. Will they ever change their stripes? No. I want to be clear about that.
But I
do think that they are going to have to be more careful. And just the fact that they have to watch themselves in those regards is pleasing to me.
Well, related to that, they are losing their viewers. They are their most loyal viewers to Newsmax and some of the others, mainly because of some of the decisions that have happened, some of the news that's come out from the Dominion lawsuit and elsewhere. Plus, there's this other story that's been circulating this week, and it comes to us from a far-right publication called The Daily Signal. And this reporter, and again, I'm using all these news terms very, very loosely when it comes to these far right websites.
Right.
But the Daily Signal published an article in which they reported on a leaked Fox News employee handbook. Those of you who have seen the video I posted today on Instagram and Twitter and TikTok know exactly what I'm talking about.
Let me make a note here. Top 10 rules in Fox Employee Handbook. Okay. Yeah. All right. I'll try to have that ready for next week.
Good. Yeah. Well, this is shocking. And there's all kinds of outrage about this happening on the Trump side of things, on the Republican side of things, on the extremist side of things. Fox News employees are allowed to use, and this is how the article starts out, Fox News employees are allowed to use bathrooms that align with their gender identity rather than their biological sex and permitted to dress in alignment with their preferred gender. They must also be addressed by their preferred name and pronouns in the workplace. Again, I remind you, this is the Fox News Channel employee handbook.
Fox. Right.
Yeah.
That one.
Yes. These are just a few of the policies outlined in the company handbook dated January 2021, a copy of which was shared with The Daily Signal. Fox also offers to help employees come up with a, quote, workplace transition plan to ease their gender transition at work. Under the category gender transition, Fox's employee handbook promises that the company is dedicated to expanding and strengthening, that's a quote, efforts to, quote, sustain a more inclusive work environment, unquote. The Fox employee handbook is posted on Workday, where employees can see company guidelines or policies, former employee told the Daily Signal. Quote, employees who are transitioning their gender, I remind you, this is the Fox News Channel employee handbook. Once again, Fox News Channel. Employees who are transitioning their gender have the right to be open about their transition if they so choose, and to work in an environment free of harassment, discrimination, or retaliation, and without fear of consequences or transphobia for living openly, the policy says. So that's a direct quote from, once again, the Fox News Employee Handbook.
Wait a minute, Bob. Aren't they the channel that's against wokeness?
Yes, they are, Buzz Burbank.
That seems odd.
Yeah, they're very much against wokeness. And you think maybe, you know, if you happen to be a Trump supporter, Fox News viewer tuning in to this podcast here, let me ask you something. Do you get the sense you're being manipulated and deceived by your political and media cult leaders? Do you feel as though they're telling you one thing publicly and doing something that's absolutely the opposite thing behind closed doors?
Let's go back to your original question. And first of all, I want to say, obviously, the handbook never applies to primetime hosts. It may apply to everyone at Fox News except the primetime host. They always get a pass, regardless of what the handbook says. But this goes back to what you were saying. Your question from before is, will this hurt Fox? And my answer is, again, revenue. If in fact they do lose their audience, despite their efforts to lie their very bestest, if they do lose audience and they they begin and they lose more lawsuits, which they're expected to do, they could be driven out of business. Will they change their stripes? Probably not. Could they go away? Well, the way things are going, very possibly. Yeah. If revelations like this cause even more people to abandon Fox News, and they very well could, especially if we give that a push, then they're going to be in serious trouble because they do have to have viewers, if nothing else, and subscribers to their app and all of that in order to continue to make money. And when they stop making money, that's when they'll stop doing this. It's all about the revenue.
Here's one last piece of this article worth sharing. It says here, citing the Human Rights Campaign, one of the most prominent LGBTQ organizations in the country, the Fox News Channel Employee Handbook. Have I mentioned that it's the Fox News Employee Handbook? Because it is. The Fox News Employee Handbook defines a slew of LGBTQ terms, including cisgender, gender expression, gender fluid, gender identity, gender nonconforming, gender transition, LGBTQ, non-binary, and transgender. We here at the Bob Seska Show, and by extension, Trek Politics with Mary L. Trump and Bob Seska,
I see,
applaud Fox News Channel for its immense wokeness.
Yes, thank you.
Well done, Fox News Channel. Keep going. You're doing great.
I didn't see that coming. In fact, it's so hard for me to get past the name of the topic here. Just these words together make me laugh. Fox Employee Handbook. That's all. I can't stop laughing about that.
Me too. Yeah. My video today, the video I posted on the various social media platforms, I did a whole switcheroo. I did a plot twist in this video.
Well, don't give it away.
Well, okay. All right. Well, but you know that it's Fox News. And what I did is I pretended as though it were the Disney Employee Handbook. And then I said, oops, we're getting a word from our control booth. No, I was wrong. It was the Fox News Employee Handbook.
Well, I want to see it anyway.
Yeah. Okay. Go watch it. Don't let my spoiling keep you from checking out the video. And
you've given away the whole movie, Bob.
I have. I'm sorry. I should got to give spoiler warnings to my own work now, I guess. All right. So that is that. We, shocked to see that Fox News Channel is embracing wokeness. I think it's a good thing. And
spread
I hope
the word.
Keep going.
Spread the word, because I think more Fox viewers need to know how woke Fox News is.
Well, and also, I think they understand implicitly behind the scenes that they need to implement policies like this for their employees. Legal. Otherwise, oh, no, they're going to get sued.
That's what this is all about. I mean, they got to try to mitigate the lawsuits. They got to try to hang on to their viewers. They're spinning a number of plates at the same time. So far, so good. But I don't see how they can survive this long term, especially the more, to borrow an NBC phrase, the more you know about Fox News, the more unattractive it becomes to MAGA.
Yeah. Well, the more people run over to the other competing networks, more likely Fox News will be to hire some more extreme people. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if some point Steve Bannon ends up on Fox News Channel. I wouldn't be surprised at some point, like, someone like Charlie Kirk or Candace Owens or Ben Shapiro, for that matter, maybe even Michael Knowles or Matt Walsh, ends up on Fox News Channel. I mean, I'm not going to step out and make that a full-on prediction.
Good,
but if it were to good, I shouldn't. Is that what you said?
Right. Yeah. Right.
You don't think that's you don't think that's possible?
Well, I think it's possible. I don't think it's likely.
Okay.
I mean, like I said, they will continue to be the animal that they are for as long as the money holds out. I think all I'm saying, really, all I mean to say is, neither one of us should make predictions probably at this point about what happens there. I'm just saying, if this continues at the pace that it is, it would seem likely that they would drive themselves out of business, and I can't see them allowing that to happen to them. That's a big money maker, and it continues to, the infrastructure remains to continue to make money there in some form or fashion. So I think it would be scary to make any prediction at this point.
Well, what's truly scary is that the debate has become so extreme in this country, at least when it comes to the right side of things, that side of the aisle, that it's too extreme for Fox News. That's an amazing statement. Like, Fox News isn't extreme enough for its own audience now. where they have to become more extreme in order to retain their audience. But there's a lot of toothpaste to shove back in the tube, because this Daily Signal piece about the Fox News Channel employee handbook.
Spread the word, kid.
Is, yeah, but that thing is circulating all over the place. I found that story on that website, Memorandum, and the other websites that were linking to that story, Red State, Town Hall, places like that. They're all talking about it. They're all screaming about how woke Fox News Channel is, and I'm happy to stoke that fire. I'm happy to inflame that whole thing going on among the Red Hats. I'm fine with that, because they deserve the internal civil war, if anyone
does. You know what's
does.
Interesting? Yeah. I here's a prediction I will make gently, and that is that I don't see, even though Fox may lose audience to these other networks, Newsmax and the rest, I don't ever see any one of them becoming as big as Fox was or is in its heyday. I think maybe that era has passed, especially with the splintering of the MAGA audience.
But also at the same time, they can't duplicate, or they would have a difficult time duplicating the kind of infrastructure and the kind of creative environment that that Roger Ailes has manufactured there.
Right.
Even though he's no longer with us. He was one of the biggest villains of our time, for sure.
He shaped that place with the tutelage and with the assistance of Rupert Murdoch.
Yeah.
It was Ailes who shaped that place.
I mean, all you can do is make a copy of a copy of a copy.
Right.
And you're going to lose some of the luster in that process, as illustrated in the Michael Keaton movie Multiplicity. If you make enough copies of something, it goes way off the rails by the third or fourth copy.
It degrades each time.
Yeah.
It's not as true in the digital world, but it was that way when we worked with tape, audio tape.
Oh, yeah.
You make a copy of a copy of a copy, and it would get worse every time, the quality of it, the audio quality. And although that happens on a microscopic scale with digital files, not nearly to the degree that it did with analog, but a copy of a copy of a copy does, in fact, as Bob says here, get watered down and weaken over time.
Yeah, but there's no lack of talent, I think, that can populate. And I say talent just in the generic way. I'm not saying that they're talented people. I'm just saying that there are people who are available who can talk well into a camera, which isn't that challenging a thing if you've done it long enough. So there are people who are willing to sell their souls for a large enough paycheck. So if Newsmax calls up news anchor X from local station, whatever, in Sheboygan, they'll say, oh, you're going to pay me how much to say what? Fine, I'll take that money. Give it to me. Come on, back up the truck and dump it into my lawn. And that's exactly how they end up populating those other networks. And so it may not necessarily be one of those things where all of the Fox News people just jump ship and go over to Newsmax or something like that, because I don't think even Tucker Carlson's going to do that. Tucker is going to do his own thing on Twitter.
Right.
But there is other fresh talent in the waiting, and there's an endless supply of that, unfortunately. And this is something that you and I have talked about, Buzz, and we've witnessed firsthand, where, you know, one of the examples, one of the sort of test markets for this process was guys in FM radio, especially FM morning radio, realizing, oh shit, we can't really talk anymore on FM radio. So where's the talking happening? Oh, AM talk radio. Let's jump over there and we'll just exaggerate whatever values we have or take on all new values. It doesn't really matter as long as there's a paycheck in it. And suddenly we've got another crop of conservative talkers on AM talk radio.
Right.
And so that sort of process continues on. What do you think? I was going to ask you while we're talking about this, what do you think of these auto manufacturers getting rid of AM radios in the cars?
Well, you know, again, for me, it's almost too early to tell. It's hard to say because, first of all, the explanation of what's happening here hasn't always been clear. I think maybe as many as 8 manufacturers say they will stop putting AM radios in electric cars.
Oh.
And the first thing you need to know about the reasoning there is electric car systems interfere with AM radio. It's very, very, very difficult to get an AM radio to work in an electric car.
Wow.
So it wasn't about silencing the right wing. It wasn't about, denying minorities airspace, denying religious communities airspace. It wasn't about any of that. It's a technical problem primarily.
Yeah.
Also, people have so many other services they can listen on now. There are apps in cars now that allow you to listen to your music. And for that matter, talk shows like this one.
Yeah.
So they thought, well, this would be fine. You know, progressive people buying electric cars won't miss AM radio. And there's been an uprising, and it concerns me. I'm the voice of an AM radio station. It's what we call a flamethrower. You can hear the mighty 1630 KCJJ across the country at night.
I love that station.
And it's a wonderful station that serves its community so well, and it's AM. And it would break my heart, and certainly the heart of the man who founded that radio station, to lose that position. So it's so many of us grew up with Wolfman Jack and Casey Kasem and our Larry Lujack and our favorite radio people in the Midwest. We listened to WLS at night from great distances away from Chicago. So there are a lot of memories and our top 40 hits of the past and all that. That's where that all lived, and it would be very sad. I guess that's my feeling, is it would be sad if it went away.
Yeah.
I don't know that it's really going away. And like I said, with apps and stuff, I think this will all work out.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a sad thing, even though it would reduce the market reach, the market share of a lot of conservative talkers.
Right.
It would also suck into its vortex radio shows like the Stephanie Miller Show.
Right,
and
right.
That's what I worry about. I worry about Stephanie Miller. I worry about Tom Hartman. I worry about the fact that there are liberal talk radio shows that are still broadcast on the AM band. And we don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak. It's the same when it comes to advertiser boycotts on AM talk radio. Right. Once you start to boycott, say, the advertisers on whoever's radio show, Dennis Prager, then suddenly those advertisers go, well, we're not going to buy any more time on AM talk radio anymore. And that ends up looping in shows like Stephanie Miller Show. And so we have to be very careful when it comes to that. We have to be very careful about screwing over people who are friendlies when we're trying to go after the enemy, so to speak.
Right, yeah.
So watch out for that friendly fire. We don't want to take out anyone who's great like Stephanie.
Well, the chips will fall where they will, but like I said, I think we're all prepared to adjust with that. You can still listen to Stephanie in your truck. So
that's true. Yeah, yeah.
Unless you get an electric truck, and then you might have to bring a radio that will probably be more crackly than usual.
And I love the idea of broadcast radio. I love that it still exists.
Well,
I love that it's ubiquitous. You can get it anywhere. You don't have to pay a thing to listen to it. It's real. It's live. And sadly, we've lost the local touch. And whether it's KCJJ or the first radio station I worked for out of college, WEEU in Reading, which was a full-service AM radio station, which I would not be the person I am right now, at least professionally, were it not for that radio station and allowing me to do things outside of the box, because it was a full-service kind of personality, news, talk-driven platform.
Well,
and, yeah.
Be honest, you did things outside of the box and they forgave you for them.
Yeah, that's true. Those things almost got me fired on several occasions. Fortunately, I never was, but almost.
On a tightly formatted radio station, I had just very cleverly found a way to break the format. And as soon as I finished the newscast and took out my headphones, the program director popped his head in the door and said, "If that had been anybody else." And then walked away.
Man, if I had been program director for some of the things that I almost got fired for, I would have fired me for those things. There's one story in particular I've told.
You're wiser now, yeah.
Yeah. Around, it was a Christmas Eve thing. I was filling in overnight, Christmas Eve into Christmas morning. And I think I had a nervous breakdown or a stroke, one of the others. And I did something that I should never have done, and I got in big trouble. The short form of it is, I did a live reading of It's a Wonderful Life, and I played all the parts.
They did the whole movie with all the parts. Yes.
At 2 o'clock in the morning on Christmas morning. That was not a good choice. That I chose poorly. when I decided to do that.
Well, live and learn.
Yeah, that was the first time I almost got fired. Thank you very much. But I.
But yeah, and yeah, I mean, a lot of I and a lot of other people got our starts in AM radio, so we always have a fond place in our heart for that. Yeah. But you know, I flow with technology changes. I listen to podcasts. You know, it's you can adjust. That's the point.
Yes, indeed. Well, more to talk about here on today's show. We haven't even jumped into all of Trump's legal jeopardy as Jack Smith starts to go after the Trump Organization on top of everything else. We're going to talk about that. Plus, Donald Trump knew that he couldn't keep the documents. Of course he knew that, but there's new evidence leading us to believe that investigators have their hands on now.
I like to call it proof.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, we also want to talk about this this Twitter hoax that happened using an AI photo of the Pentagon. And a little bit of vindication for me. I'm going to take some time to say, hey, I was kind of right about this shit.
You warned us.
Yeah. Plus E. Jean Carroll, the 14th Amendment, and a whole lot more on today's show. So please, stick around. So today's podcast is brought to you in part by the After Party on our Patreon page. Every Friday, Kimberly Johnson and I record a fourth podcast for the week. But this one is completely different from the usual Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday shows. The Friday After Party podcast is filled with all the politics that you crave, while also including uncensored, completely obscene conversations about sex, drugs, movies, television, our personal lives. Lots of ribaldry on the Friday After Party podcast.
You two are naughty.
SAT that word for me, please. Ribaldry. It's all the crap we can't get away with on the free show, so please help support this podcast by subscribing to our Friday After Party for just $10 per month. And bonus, you're also going to get two Shadow Docket shows every week included in that level of support. BobSeskaShow.com, Patreon.com/BobSeskaShow, and we thank you.
Not available on AM.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Bob Seska!
Yeah, my good friend Mike Farley sent me this song. It's a brand new song from Brian Lissick. Yeah.
Wow.
We've been playing Brian Lissick since the very beginning of our indie music here on the podcast, and I love this track. This is a cover of The Replacements' Alex Chilton. That's the name of the song. And as far as those of you who know, Alex Chilton was the genius behind the 70s band Big Star. And there's a song about him. We lost him way too soon. And if you don't know, by the way, if you don't know anything about Big Star, there's a couple of documentaries circulating out there. There's one really, really good one about Big Star and how tragic the story was behind this amazing rock and roll band that did this incredible couple of albums that just suffered so greatly from shitty, shitty timing. It's one of those things in entertainment where so much of entertainment and success in entertainment is about timing. Sure. And Big Star just couldn't find the right timing, even though their music was immensely influential, and so influential that the Replacements wrote a song about the lead guy from Big Star, Alex Chilton, and now Brian Lissick is covering that song. So how's that meta for you?
Well,
huh?
Nobody can replace the Replacements like Brian Lissick. That fairly rocks, doesn't it? That's a good driving song, right?
I love that song, absolutely.
Yeah. I meant to say this earlier, Bob, and I never saw this coming earlier in my life, but here I am pushing 70 and standing on a corner screaming about Nazis. That's how we started the show, and I'm just thinking back on it, I thought, well, here I am, you know, it happened, didn't see it coming, but here we are.
Kimberly and I were laughing about an email you sent me over the weekend. I'm putting together the audio elements for the forthcoming Trek Politics podcast with me and Mary Trump, and I'm putting together the intro, and since 1995 you've been doing all of my voiceovers for every single show I've ever done, whether radio or podcasting, minus one. There was one show I did on an FM station in Allentown, Pennsylvania, that I didn't use your voice because I wasn't allowed to. But everything else has had your voice on it. And you sent me some line reads for my Trek Politics intro via email. And the subject line was, well, I'm retired, you see.
Yeah, I had nothing else to do. So I'm writing for Bob.
I love that. I had to run right over to Kimberly's office. And say, oh, you won't believe this subject line that Buzz wrote. It's so funny. Thank you for doing that, by the way.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm so excited about this show. I can't wait.
So am I. Mary and I keep calling each other going, I can't believe we're doing this. This is amazing. Lots of people have been hearing about it, too.
Apparently, so.
The word is getting around, for sure. I can't go into details, but people know about this podcast, so I hope we don't end up disappointing everyone. I think it's going to be good.
I think I can give this clue. Big eyes are on this show.
Yes, indeed.
Big eyes are on this show.
Yeah, our first show, our first episode, probably going to drop the first week of June. We're talking to Terry Metalis, the great, the inimitable Terry Metalis.
Director, showrunner of season 3 of Picard.
Writer, yeah. Oh, my God. The visionary behind the awesomeness of season 3 of Picard. If not the best, one of the best seasons of Star Trek ever created. Writing that's up there with season 2 of Fargo, up there with Breaking Bad, up there with Better Call Saul. So tight, so perfect, and just as a Star Trek fan, I'm so grateful for all of it.
Here's some Trek politics for you. I feel safer now talking about Star Trek in public because, you know, for a while it was just a few of us. I don't say a few, it was a lot of us, but we were kind of off to ourselves. This thing has gone mainstream on Paramount Plus with the various Star Trek series, and most especially Picard Season 3, which rocketed into the top 10 of everything streaming on video right now.
Yeah.
So it's like completely mainstream now. And so please talk about Star Trek openly and publicly all that you'd like.
Yeah, it landed in the top 10 twice, I think. At least twice.
Maybe three. Yeah. I don't know. It's been there.
Which is a huge deal for Paramount, because I think the only thing that popped into the top 10 prior to that was a single episode of Yellowstone, I believe.
Right.
But beyond that, I mean, Star Trek in the top 10, Nielsen download ratings is just a gigantic big deal.
And it's such a good way.
It is. And also make sure to circulate the hashtag Star Trek Legacy. Hashtag Star Trek Legacy. That will continue the story of Captain 7 of 9 aboard the Enterprise G. I cannot wait.
Got to have more Shaw. More Captain Shaw. Naturally, I would space on the actor's name right now.
Todd Stashwick.
Todd Stashwick, thank you.
Yeah.
Love this guy. I just finished watching a series on Apple TV called The Last Thing He Told Me with Jennifer Garner.
Uh-huh.
And Todd Stashwick has a smallish role, but a crucial role in this thing. And it was just delightful to see him again and in something else. But Captain Shaw is how I always will think of Todd Stashwick. That's great. By the way, I noticed this week on Twitter, he announced that he had voted in the SAG-AFTRA voting to see if our union, the SAG-AFTRA, is going to go out and strike in support of and on our own behalf. Because what we're being threatened here with, what they're being threatened with, really,
The working actors and the working writers are all being threatened by being replaced by AI.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this is all about. This has really become the central issue. And certainly with the possible actors strike, the SAG-AFTRA strike, it's about the AI as much as anything else. It's about being replaced by soulless machines.
Yeah.
And in your arts and your entertainment. And so he announced that, Todd Stashwick announced that he had voted for the strike authorization for SAG-AFTRA. And I retweeted him and said, because I didn't realize the voting was open. And I immediately got on the SAG-AFTRA website with my member number and my PIN number. And I voted along with all the other SAG-AFTRA members to authorize that strike.
God, Stashwick has been in so many great things. Obviously, he was in Terry Metalis's previous show, 12 Monkeys, which went for four seasons. He was one of the leads in that. It's an amazing show. And I remembered Todd Stashwick going all the way back to The Riches, which was that amazing show. It lasted for about a season and a half. It was one of those shows that got killed way too soon. It was Eddie Izzard and Minnie Driver and Todd Stashwick, of course. And the kid, God, the kids were great in that show, too.
Yes.
And it was about a family of Irish travelers. And they scam their way into living in this McMansion in a very wealthy part of this town and try to maintain that facade, always one step ahead of people discovering that they were scam artists. And Todd Stashwick played the villain, kind of, well, I guess you could say the villain in that show if there was a villain. Just so entertaining and such a great show. It's one of those shows we just got done watching, or I should say rewatching for the thousandth time, Freaks and Geeks, another show that was killed way ahead of its time. So it's one of those kinds of shows that's like, oh my God, this is so good. How do they cancel it so soon? But anyway, so that's that. And you were mentioning AI, so we might as well talk about this this Twitter AI story, which I feel a little bit vindicated about, because this is the kind of thing, and I don't feel happy that this has happened. Don't get me wrong.
No.
But this is the kind of thing I've been warning about. This is why I was making such a huge stink about the Twitter blue checks.
A lot of people misinterpreted it. They thought it was maybe a vanity thing, that you were mad about having your blue check taken away and that they were giving it to just anybody with $8. And while that may be partly true, that wasn't your motivation.
Yeah.
And you have been vindicated here. You were simply trying to warn us all. And even I didn't get it at the very first, but I quickly caught on.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly well ahead of a lot of other people I still see out there who don't understand the ramifications of how Elon Musk has upended the safeness of Twitter by upending the blue check system. So, please remind us of what just happened this week.
Yeah, so what happened was a Twitter blue subscribed account posing as the Bloomberg account. So on the surface, it looks legitimate. It looks like it's the Bloomberg account with the blue check next to it. Circulated a photo and a fake news headline that the Pentagon had been bombed, or so there had been an explosion outside the Pentagon.
Right.
And I'll just say right off the top that anyone who saw the photo and who knows what the outside of the Pentagon looks like knew that it was fake, because even Ben Collins did a great video yesterday where he illustrated the difference between a rectangle and a Pentagon in terms of the geometry. So this circulated, and there was actual panic about that. So much panic that it actually affected the stock markets. The stock markets actually dipped on the news that the Pentagon had been bombed when it really hadn't been bombed.
Right.
Now, this photo obviously was manufactured using AI, but the thing that propelled that AI into becoming a viral thing on the internet is the fact that this fake Bloomberg account with its blue check had more reach, had more engagement because of the Twitter blue subscription.
Right.
So if you're a fake account, like this fake Bloomberg account, and you sign up, and anyone can do it, sign up for a Twitter blue account, that means you not only get that badge next to your name, the blue check, but you also get increased circulation. So more people see your tweets, more so than people who don't have a blue check or who aren't subscribed to Twitter blue. So you see how toxic this subscription process, this Twitter blue thing, can become, and how it's propelling disinformation. The photo was spread by dozens of accounts on social media, including Russia Today, RT, a Russian state media Twitter account with more than 3 million followers. But the post has since been deleted. Most other accounts that retweeted the image appear to be affiliated with conspiracies or the war in Ukraine. Information about the purported explosion was shared by the Twitter account at Delta One at 10:06 a.m. Eastern Time. By 10:10, the market had fallen 0.26%, but quickly bounced back.
A little over a quarter of a percent.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, this wasn't a catastrophic drop in the stock market, but it was
investors believe it. Investors believed it that they took action accordingly. And as Bob said, this thing got, first of all, you have Elon Musk's blue check system greatly amplifying this lie and this shocking lie. And a lot of people don't look as closely as others do and to see whether to be able to tell whether it's AI or whether it's real. Is it live or Memorex? The guy, you can, and that's the problem with AI and with the blue check system. They are both tools, weapons, if you will, for spreading disinformation.
And so that's the biggest problem here. And I see this story as the canary in the coal mine.
Yeah.
This is one of those things where, there wasn't a whole lot of damage done, but you can kind of get a sense of where this could be used to wreak havoc. We've got a big election coming up, and this is one of the things that I've been thinking about primarily when it comes to how toxic this Twitter blue system that Elon has rolled out, because he overpaid for this shithole website, can become. Because we have this election coming up, he took over Twitter about the same time Trump declared his candidacy for president. Elon doesn't believe in disinformation. He doesn't even believe it exists.
That's a typical right-wing stance, by the way. That matches what every right-wing Republican will tell you.
Exactly right. So from that perspective, do you really think that Elon Musk is going to police his own Twitter blue subscribers for disinformation?
Yeah. No, he needs the $8.
Yeah, exactly. Plus, I think he's directly motivated to elevate dictators like Donald Trump. Obviously, we've seen that. We've seen it when it came to Erdogan, for example, which, by the way, that's the thing that the Krasensteins agreed with. We were talking about the Krasensteins before the show. That was the story that, Elon made the right choice when it came to Turkey's elections by, blocking those accounts, even though that was that was wrong on every level. But regardless, this is the kind of thing that Elon is up to behind the scenes. And when you've got a system that amplifies the voices of disinformers, as long as they're paying him, that can create all kinds of problems for the forthcoming election. And we know what those problems will be because we've been down this road before. This is exactly what happened in 2015 and 2016 with social media. It became this breeding ground for disinformation, for spreading and circulating disinformation. And now that disinformation, unlike 2015 and 2016, is going to be supercharged by these Twitter blue subscriptions.
It certainly can happen, and you can see how easily people, a significant number of people, fall for it. Just by the number, you'd think Wall Street investors would be a bit more careful about that sort of thing, but no, apparently all they need to see is a false image. If the misleading AI post is the canary in the coal mine, then that makes the little blue Twitter bird actually a canary. So we didn't know the species until now, but now we know the species of the bird is canary.
That is absolutely true. So the other thing you want to bear in mind, too, when it comes to Twitter blue, is that Meta, and we're talking about Facebook, and we're talking about Instagram, have each rolled out their own version of Twitter blue, where you get the blue check. If you subscribe, you get the blue check, and you get heightened reach. You get turbocharged reach for your posts on Facebook and Instagram if you subscribe. So who do you think is going to be using that? Who's going to have an advantage when it comes to spreading disinformation ahead of the 2024 election? So hang on tight. I think the sooner we all agree that this is a serious issue, the sooner we can do what we need to do in order to push back against it.
I had to chuckle at a personal message I got from somebody on Meta. Well, there's a Meta app that sort of combines everything that Zuckerberg does. And this person wrote me to say, look, I'm not on Facebook anymore because that place sucks. I'm over here on Instagram now. not realizing that he jumped out of one frying pan into another frying pan.
Yeah.
You know, Twitter sucks. Facebook sucks. Instagram sucks. TikTok sucks. We don't have any choice. That's what's there. But just know that they're all dangerous. And going from among those four, going from one to the other won't do you a lot of good.
Yeah, and I'm one of those contradictory hypocrites when it comes to the Meta websites. Yeah, where I'm basically done with Facebook. Sometimes I promote the show on Facebook. I've got my own profile page and a page for the show, and I post new episodes there. But beyond that, I'm not really spending a whole lot of personal time on Facebook. But Instagram, I love me some Instagram. That is one of my favorite places to be. And therein is my contradiction. But I'm aware. I'm aware of what to look out for. And I think the more we are aware of the fact that disinformation is going to flourish on these platforms ahead of 2024.
But especially Twitter. Especially because of the what he's done with the blue check system.
Oh, yeah. Yep,
and
exactly.
Just the fact that he's there.
So, moving on here, Trump knew that he couldn't keep the documents. We all knew this. I mean, we were always aware of the fact that Trump was just bullshitting when it came to, I could just do it with my mind. I could imagine that the documents were all declassified, so that's how they were declassified. We all know that's bullshit, because whatever Donald Trump says is certainly bullshit. But we now have evidence that is now in the hands of Jack Smith, proving that he knew, among other things, there are all of these notes that he received from Evan Corcoran, right?
Yeah, and there's so much to this. And, you know, I heard from somebody today who said, somebody was talking about the Fonnie Willis case and how we have a timetable for that now. And somebody said, but what about Jack Smith? What's Merrick Garland doing? Yeah. Well, Jack Smith is doing Merrick Garland's work in this particular area. So, you know, there's this still perception out there that the Justice Department, Merrick Garland, aren't doing anything. Oh, my God, one of the biggest bombshells of the year dropped last night from The Guardian and The New York Times reporting on what Jack Smith has. And what he has right now, as you just said, Bob, is evidence/proof that Trump knew. And this goes to another thing, perception that's out there. People say, well, we've known this for 2 years. Why has it taken 2 years to get to this point? Or you can even be as specific as the documents. As soon as the documents case broke, a lot of us said, well, obviously he's been selling and trading those to other countries. Guess what? There's a difference, and we all need to remember, there's a difference in knowing something to be true in your heart and in your mind. You know that he did. At the time, we knew that that's what he had done, but there was no proof of that.
Right.
Now, with the passage of time, there is proof.
Mm-hmm. Right. Federal prosecutors have evidence that Trump was put on notice that he could not retain any classified documents after he was subpoenaed for their return last year, as they examine whether the subsequent failure to fully comply with the subpoena was a deliberate act of obstruction by the former president. This is all according to reporting, exclusive, I believe, reporting from The Guardian. So last June, Evan Corcoran found roughly 40 classified documents in the storage room at Mar-a-Lago and told the Justice Department that no further materials remained at the property. And that was later shown to be untrue. Translating from journalism speak to real speak, it was a lie, is what that was. And after the FBI later returned with a warrant and seized 101 additional classified documents. Whoops. Shit.
Yep. Well, there's a lot to this. It's first of all, obstruction of justice.
Yeah.
And what you need to know is that, I don't know if it was Corcoran or one of the other attorneys, was subpoenaed, was compelled to testify and to turn over documents. Jack Smith has 50 handwritten pages from Trump's lawyer about their conversations back and forth. And we now have evidence/proof that Trump was told by his attorney, we've received a subpoena. We have no choice but to comply with the subpoena. Tell me where to look to get this stuff so we can turn it over. And Trump comes back with, is there some way we can get around this?
Yeah.
You know, so he knew every step. And it was a lot of back and forth of Trump refusing to accept that he had to turn this stuff over. Between these 50 pages of documents and the video of boxes being moved at Mar-a-Lago, Jack Smith has a specific timeline showing that Trump had those boxes moved and removed before telling the attorney where to look for the documents. So Trump hid this stuff from his attorney. Why is this important? Because you can't lie to even your own attorney. Your attorney, even though they're your attorney, is an officer of the court. And so when you lie to your attorney, you're lying to the court. That is a very serious crime. What we have here, what Jack Smith has here, is proof of obstruction of justice and very likely proof of a violation of a very specific part of the Espionage Act. Because what Jack Smith is doing now is subpoenaing the business records of the Trump Organization, specifically about its dealings with, and we're talking real estate and other deals, its dealings, Trump's dealings with China, France, Kuwait, Oman, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates. In the case of Saudi Arabia, it was about his frickin' golf tournament. In the case of France, it was about getting dirt on Macron. In the case of Oman, it was about his Trump building there. There's evidence here that Trump, in fact, traded or sold or gave classified documents to foreign countries to help his own business. And Jack Smith has the receipts. Jack Smith has the receipts on obstruction of justice here. So it's not just about the lying. It's also about a violation of the Espionage Act, for which Trump could serve up to 10 years in prison for every single document.
Yeah, I'd love to hear that. That's some great news. That puts a smile on my face. Wait, hey, what do you think of this? You know, Tim Parlatore, Trump's ex-attorney, went on, I believe it was CNN, and said something to the effect of, they're not going to indict him for this. They're not going to, either whether it's the documents, whether it's January 6th, they're just not going to get him on these things. Meantime, Ty Cobb, not the old-timey baseball player, the current Ty Cobb with the funny mustache, he says that Trump is definitely going to get indicted over the Mar-a-Lago documents at the very least. So what do you think about those assessments? And why do you think Tim Parlatore is like, oh, yeah, he's not going to get indicted, but Ty Cobb absolutely will get indicted?
Well, I don't know where either one of those guys are coming from, really. I mean, I can tell you, all I can tell you is what I just told you, and that is, Jack Smith has a killer case here.
Yeah.
And for those who think Merrick Garland isn't doing anything, the DOJ isn't doing anything, that even Jack Smith isn't doing anything, check out The Guardian and The New York Times from last night and this morning.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'll find a very different story. Trump is in, and you know, my wife has said this to me, and I know a lot of you are saying it now. We've heard this before.
Yeah.
But we got him. As long as it may take, and as long as it has taken, we're getting there.
Yeah.
This is as close as we've been. This is very real. This is very solid. I'm telling you, with these written notes and the videos and the timeline that they produce, makes it very clear that Trump was not only not returning the documents as requested, he was actually hiding them. And hiding them is a violation of the Espionage Act.
Yeah, I mean, obstruction of justice alone, I think that is absolutely something that we're going to see. I mean, I don't think I'm going out on a limb when I say that I think he's going to get indicted on obstruction of justice, the very least, when it comes to the Mar-a-Lago classified documents.
The very least.
Yeah, very, very clear. I think January 6th is going to be a more difficult challenge for Jack Smith. That's not to say that Trump won't get indicted for that, but I think it's a much more murky case to make.
Murky and complex.
Murkier, yeah, yeah.
But I think the lines, even on that case, and that's going to be a slower, thicker, longer case, but the lines are already being drawn in that case. The dots are being connected there. Yeah. And as I said months and months and months ago, eventually you're going to see a link between, say, the Proud Boys and Trump.
Yeah.
With people in between, but you'll be able to draw that line, if you can't already, through that hotel in D.C. I can't remember the name of it, across the street from the White House, where his war room was set up, where Rudy was, then finished the line to the White House and Trump and Mark Meadows. It is going to be a harder case. I predict the documents case will come first, and the documents case, from what I've seen, is enough to put him away for life.
Mm-hmm. And just to be clear, I think that obviously he committed these crimes. I'm not saying that the criminality is murky.
I'm just saying, from
the perspective of Jack Smith, he's got to prove all of this, and he has to have enough evidence to create an airtight case. And so in that way, it's a little bit more difficult to thread that needle than it would be for the Mar-a-Lago documents, which is a much more clear-cut crime that we've seen examples of in the past.
But this goes to what I was saying before, too, about people say to me, and you're right, oh, we've known this for 2 years now. Well, yeah, you knew it and I knew it in our hearts and in our minds, but that's quite a different thing from having an airtight case that will convince a jury, not just persuade them, but convince a jury to convict. And that's a whole nother ballgame altogether. That takes time, and that's why it's taken the time to get to where we are today. But look at the doorstep we're standing on here, just with the revelation on these documents from Mar-a-Lago.
Okay, well, in a couple of seconds here, we're going to talk about the latest from E. Jean Carroll and some thoughts, some new thoughts about the CNN town hall. We'll talk about that in just a second here. Plus, maybe a little bit about the 14th Amendment and the debt ceiling and all of that crapola. And whatever else we can get in the remaining minutes of the show. So back with more of the podcast right after these words.
Bob Seska.
Seen the moon rise across the big blue sea.
Yeah, from England. Yeah, this is my friend Dave Barrett and Subred Lux. Brand new music. Yeah, one of the things he does, as soon as they churn out another song, they send me a sample. And this is a brand new track from Subred Lux called Meatball. I don't know if it's about Ron DeSantis, but it very well could be. I haven't listened to the details of the lyrics yet, but
it is now.
Thank you to the great Dave Barrett and brand new project Subred Lux. Link in the description, of course. To add all of this music to your record collection, just go to bobseska.com, find this episode dated 5/23/23. That's easy to remember. Click on that link, scroll on down, you'll find links to support both Brian Lissick and his cover of The Replacements, Alex Chilton, and you can also find this brand new track from Subred Lux. Awesome.
Which is driving and yet ethereal at the same time. Fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. It's my favorite track from Subred Lux so far. Yeah.
Very good.
Just such good work. All right, excellent. Moving along here on the show as we come to the end for our Tuesday edition, E. Jean Carroll has asked a judge to, what, reopen the lawsuit to include Trump's CNN lies?
She's asked to, and it's not the right word here I'm pulling, to amend. Perhaps I'll think of the right word in a moment. But basically it is to amend her lawsuit to include the things Trump said the day after the judgment that ordered him to pay $5 million for raping and defaming E. Jean Carroll. Trump went on CNN the very next day and said the same things that cost him $5 million the day before.
Like an idiot.
And the beauty of this, and I'm not sure anybody's, we didn't know this initially. We've learned this over the last 24 hours. This court filing that she's made with the judge who covered the original case, this court filing is asking the judge to impose a commensurate amount of punishment for what he's done. You see, in the verdict was about not only past and present, but future defamation that he might make. And it was, in that sense, a legal warning to Trump because he'd been found guilty of this. It was basically the court's way of saying, we're going to keep an eye on you to make sure you don't continue this defamation. And he went on CNN the next day and continued the defamation.
Yeah.
So E. Jean Carroll is now asking the judge for, on top of the $5 million, on top of the $5 million, she wants another $10 million plus... plus punitive damages.
Punitive damages.
plus court costs. None of this is cheap. So we're talking, I have no idea. We're talking an additional $20, $25 million that she's asking for here. I mean, yeah. I don't know what the total would come. But, the original settlement was $3 million for this and $2 million for that, so she gets $5 million. This one's going to be $10 million for the additional defamation and then however other millions on top of that for punitive damages to try to persuade him not to do it again.
Yeah.
And that's apparently going to have to be a high number because he's shown that he's inclined to do it again. And then, of course, the court costs, which even in Trump's case can't be cheap. Of course, his MAGA supporters are paying that bill.
Yeah, of course. Of course. But I love the idea of E. Jean Carroll saying, oh, you lied about me again? Yoink, I'll take some more money. Thank you very much. You might as well just give me your checkbook, Donald, and I'll take it over here and just sign a bunch of the checks and I'll just fill in the dollar amounts there.
The team, the team of lawyers working for E. Jean Carroll on this and really on behalf of all Americans in this case studied it and determined that rather than file a new lawsuit based on the language in the original court decision that wasn't necessary, that all they had to do was go back and ask and show the judge the evidence, what he said the very next day, and ask for another $10 million plus punitive plus costs.
Yeah, and now I'm wondering, too, whether or not this CNN town hall really was a bad thing. You know,
right,
I'm
know,
beginning
right?
to rethink my take on the CNN town hall, given the fact that this has emerged from it, right?
Yeah, here's my position. Still am not going to give CNN a break or the benefit of the doubt on this. They provided a 70-minute free platform for a man who's a court-documented sex abuser, for a man who's an accused felon, a man who's subject to a number of other investigations, to treat him like a normal politician and to give him that free 70 minutes on the air. Yeah. There's no forgiving ever for me, CNN, for what they did there. But did something good come out of it, as often happens with bad things? Yeah, absolutely. He got himself in more trouble. This will cost him tens of millions of dollars before it's all over. And if he doesn't keep his mouth shut, it'll cost even more than that. But I think you're going to find a shut-up point the higher the price tag goes.
Now, see, I'm always in favor of anything that causes Donald Trump pain. And if this is going to cause Donald Trump pain,
it does.
Fine, I'll kind of renege a little bit on my take about the CNN town hall. I'm fine with that. Obviously, I still, as you said, I still disagree with normalizing this guy and pretending as though he's just a regular politician who fell off the turnip truck and decided, hey, I'm going to throw my hat into that politics ring.
The only way I can forgive CNN is if they also make a great turnabout at some point, and I don't see that happening.
No.
This Zasloff or whatever his name is,
who was
speaking at BU, and people were chanting, pay your writers, because they were supporting the striking writers, because he also owns Discovery Warner or Warner Discovery or whatever it is that killed HBO last night. He recently said, very proudly of CNN, which he also now owns, Republicans are back on the air at CNN.
Oh, fuck that.
He excitedly announced that Republicans are back on the air at CNN.
No.
I can never forgive them. But did something good come out of that? Well, certainly I think E. Jean Carroll thinks so.
Yeah, Zaslav, I don't understand this decision with rebranding HBO Max. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this, but it doesn't make any sense that, I mean, HBO is one of the most golden brands in all of television. It's one of those things that goes back to the late 70s, early 80s, practically, where
70s,
it was like the gold standard for cable television. It was the thing that, oh my God, if you were staying at a hotel that had HBO as part of its cable channel lineup, that was like a special event. The shows that have aired on HBO over the years have also been the gold standard of television. And to change the branding from HBO to Max, which is like the shorthand for that Cinemax. Sort of third tier cable network, Cinemax, why on earth? There has to be, from a logical perspective, there has to be some sort of legal reason they're doing this or something behind the scenes that we don't know about. It doesn't make any sense at all.
But I don't trust this guy. I can't trust CNN as long as it's under his rule, as long as Discovery is running the place, because that place is a mess. I can't trust him anymore. But yeah, something good did come out of that, certainly for E. Jean Carroll and really for all of us, since at this point, E. Jean Carroll doesn't need anything else. E. Jean Carroll, honestly, is doing this, and her lawyers and her team of lawyers are doing this for us.
Yeah.
They're doing it for the rest of the country.
Right.
I'm exceptionally grateful for what they're doing.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely a patriotic thing. One last thing here before we wrap up. A brief word about the 14th Amendment and whether the president will use that to lift the debt ceiling. And perhaps permanently. Now, what I mean when I say that is Richard Haass. We all know Richard Haass. He's a analyst for MSNBC. He's a foreign policy expert and so on. He warned against this. He warned against Joe Biden using the 14th Amendment to lift the debt ceiling, saying that a future Republican president would then reciprocate by doing the same. And my response to that is, So what? If a future Republican president does it? It takes it off the table. It takes the brinkmanship off the table permanently in that sense.
So it can never again be used by either party, although I only know of one that actually does it.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, if a future Republican president invokes the 14th Amendment to lift the debt ceiling, fine with me. We shouldn't be monkeying with a credit default like this, economic calamity. It's maddening.
I like a lot of progressives. I don't like the fact that Biden has been negotiating with these terrorists who are holding the world's economy,
the
hostage.
World,
It's disgusting to me what they're doing, and I'm disappointed largely. I understand his heart's in the right place, but disappointed in Biden for engaging in negotiations with these guys. Although I will say one positive thing about the negotiations is one of the things they're talking about now is Biden's agreeing to like hold spending on certain areas, but also and only on the condition that we get new taxes on the rich to help pay for all this.
Yeah.
And that's where Republicans are drawing the line. They're saying, no, you can't. So the 14th Amendment, absolutely, which says the nation's debt is real and the bills have to be paid. And I don't understand why it hasn't been invoked already. We need to end this debt ceiling madness and end the possibility, remove it as a weapon to hold the world's economy hostage.
And I think one of the reasons why this has become a point of conversation about the 14th Amendment is it serves a strategic purpose. It telegraphs to Kevin McCarthy, you know what? Fuck around and find out. If you don't give me what I want, I'm the president. If you don't give me what I want and what is right when it comes to these negotiations, I'm just going to go over here to the nuclear option and pull this trigger because I can. And you know what's going to happen? The courts may freak out about it, but it'll be too late for the courts to do anything about it because it's right there.
Already,
it's right there in the 14th Amendment.
And we will have already stopped a default by that time. And
yes.
That's really the important thing. I think he has to use it. I don't.
I don't understand. And I saw, and I didn't understand, a right-winger posted, you know, I dare you to invoke the 14th. Go ahead, invoke the 14th Amendment and see what happens. Well, I don't know what, you know, that was the end of their threat. We don't know what happens if we invoke the 14th. So,
yeah,
let's go ahead and do it and find out.
I don't see a downside. I just don't see a downside. If the only downside is mutually assured destruction, both the Republicans and Democrats using the 14th Amendment to lift the debt ceiling, of course that's a positive. That's an overwhelmingly positive thing. Taking that off the table is, to me, the best possible side effect of these negotiations. That is the best case scenario, that just goes away as a thing. Because monkeying with the world economy like this is just not healthy. The very process of the brinkmanship itself, let's say we don't default, they come up with a deal.
Right.
The very process of this argle-bargle, this back and forth, that destabilizes things. That puts everyone on tenterhooks and going, oh my God, what's going to happen next? Oh, it's that thing I kept talking about during the Trump years of leaning too far back in your chair and catching yourself just before you fall over. Yeah.
And it makes more sense to me now than it ever has before. The world is nervous, and the stock market is starting to show nervousness over this as well.
Yeah.
Even coming close to this, it can't be allowed. Invoke the 14th now, please.
Okay, so coming up on the big Shadow Docket episode for today on our Patreon page, patreon.com/BobSeskaShow, a little bit about No Labels and Operation Chaos and our friend Harlan Crow. We're going to talk about that, plus let's see what else here.
Can we talk about Ron DeSantis? Can we have, because that's one of my favorite topics these
days. Yes, lots about Ron DeSantis and his awful public appearances this past week. Plus, oh my God, the NAACP has issued a travel advisory for your state of Florida. And so lots to say about that.
Please, yes.
Plus, another list that doesn't include me. I don't know why. I try really hard to get onto these lists of things and still not on this list. We'll talk about what that list is. Suffice to say, it's in the context of sanctions. We talk about that. Plus, a little bit about last night's White House plumbers on Max or HBO or HBO Max or whatever the fuck it's called now. Got to talk about last night's White House plot. Oh my God. Continues to be amazing. All right.
I look forward to it.
Patreon.com/BobSeskaShow. We'll see you over there, folks. Bye-bye.